All right, one and all, welcome to episode 34 of the Love Pod. That's right, we've been here for 33 weeks prior to this. It's thank you very much for joining us on this little journey into the mad world of Bolton Wanderers, the most metal football club in the universe. Tonight, I'm joined by Dan and I'm joined by Tom. Lads, how are you getting on? Dan, you first. I've not spoke to you for quite a while. We've been absent last week. Life treating you well?
Yes, all good. All good. I'm surviving. Like I said, I'm still on tonight, this week, even though I am nursing like a rather strong hangover. And even though Rob pussied out of it today because he's got a hangover, but you know, that's some stubbornness while you're in it.
Ah, good for Rob. Good for Rob. Yeah, you'll be on half term for about another 6 weeks, won't you, Dan? Approximately.
On the 18th of December, I break up. So, got quite good a while yet.
Good grief. Tom, how about yourself? You all well? You're looking forward to going back to school tomorrow?
I'm depressed. I'm depressed, Chris.
Is it Bolton Wanderers related, Tom?
Yeah.
It's a mix of everything, I think.
That and going back to employment tomorrow, yeah.
Well, I've had Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off with my little one on her first half term, and I'm not looking forward to going back in, not one little bit. But hey, what can you do? It's a foggy Sunday night. Let's get recording, eh? Well... Preston North End away.
Oh.
Anyone got anything positive to say about it whatsoever?
Clayton looked alright. That's it.
Wow. Well, my missus was watching the highlights with me last night, and she said that he deserved to be fouled because of that haircut he's got. Apparently, that's quite an interesting appraisal of his talents. But yeah, 0-0 away to Preston. So their long run without a home win continues, and our long run without any kind of decent performance, victory or otherwise, continues also. Tom, feel free. Just want to just tell us what you thought about the whole dire experience.
It's just... I entirely blame Sky. I blame Sky Sports because before kickoff they had football gold.
Oh, they did.
And it was Bolton 3, Preston 0. And there I am, 1 minute, I'm watching Ricardo Gardner take the mick out of Sean Gregan on halfway, go on a run, put it in the back of the net and send us to the Premier League. And then the 90 minutes that followed was the current squad taking us to League One. It was absolutely diabolical from start to finish.
Yeah.
Any advances on that, Dan? I don't think there's much else to argue with that.
Yeah, I watched it too and I was like, oh, I've only seen this like a handful of times in my life. I don't really know like precisely what happened. It's something that always escapes my mind. So like seeing it again, and then just sat there like smiling, going, we were good once, but alas, I think no. I think the only people I'm not annoyed at after that game were Clayton, Casado, Amos, Wheater, and at a push, Spearman. But apart from that, all of them can get to fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch it live. I was out at a long-standing Halloween party, a kiddies Halloween party, which was much more fun. But I came home and watched the game pretty much straight away. So by 10 o'clock, I was in the same sort of funk that everyone else was in, having sat through an hour and a half of turgid football. Oh, I don't even know. It's not even surprising anymore, is it? I think it's the acceptance of our current fate and our current position is just the more upsetting thing about the whole thing. Did either of you expect anything different? Dan, you first on that one?
0-0 was just like so obvious, wasn't it? It was like they've not won at home game all season, we've not won an away game all season. So it's fucking obvious it's going to be the shittest game in the fucking world. But I don't know, we needed to win it. And so that thought, you know, in my head, was just like, we need to win, so maybe we actually will win. But no, it can never be that easy for Bolton, can it?
No, not at all. Tom?
Well, more fool me, I was hoping that we could get something from it, and for whatever reason, there was no evidence behind it. But I went into the game thinking that we'd put a performance in, and it's the hope that kills you, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is. It definitely is. I mean, I've got an excuse to get out of going on Saturday as well. Bristol City at home. I mean, if there's ever a game that we need to win, I should really be looking at leaping onto this excuse and not bothering. But being the eternal optimist I am, I'll be there, you know,
getting a ticket for it and going. I'm contemplating not going because going's usually a given if I'm back home at all. So I'm actually contemplating not going and just saving a tenner. A weekend of disappointment.
Yeah, it's a massive game, isn't it? We'll talk about that later on, but it's an absolutely massive game. Well, just to sort of to go into it a bit deeper then. I know you said the positives earlier on. I mean, from what I saw, I think Wheater Wita, maybe Clayton at a push, and I give Amos the credit just because he didn't concede. But I'm really struggling for anyone else. I mean, Casado, yeah, lots of grit, lots of flying tackles, you know, on the borderline legal tackles, which I'm happy for him to do. But the rest of them were dreadful, absolutely dreadful. We'll go through the players one by one shortly, but I don't think we're going to find much happiness and joy amongst that particular lot. How can we expect to win football matches with just one fella up front in Ami Obit and zero creativity in the entire team? It's absolutely impossible, Dan.
Yeah, we had no midfield whatsoever, just absolutely nothing. They were all anonymous, apart from Spearing's one very good pass to Clayton, which obviously they should have gone down to 10 men for. We had absolutely nothing from the midfield. They were anonymous. They didn't get close to Preston's, you know, more creative players. They didn't get the ball,
no.
They didn't try and pass it on the floor. We had, again, DeVete and Derek just hitting fucking atrocious long balls out. We had nothing. The only times we tried getting on the floor a bit was when, again, Casado tried passing it on the floor a bit, but he had nothing, no one offering to him. I was like, say, I give Clayton the credit because he was the only one in our whole team who looked, just, you know, he was the only threat. I think he didn't give the ball away once, so he's very economical with his use of the ball. He was literally our only little spark of creativity, but he had no service. He was not given the ball enough, so nothing happened, and it's a fucking dire straits at the minute.
Yeah, I thought the interesting Mark Isles tweeted an interesting stat at halftime about the 33% pass completion rate or something. I think it was for Derek. Now, I don't normally put much faith in those stats, but you know, you could see from it was clear to see just watching it on the Sky playback like I did that he was just, it's a fish out of water there, isn't it? I don't understand when we signed Pizano, we've got Vela, why we're persevering with a centre half who's not playing particularly well out of position. I mean, Tom, out of those that we've got to choose from, who would you pick in that role?
Laurie Wilson.
Well, granted, he had his poor game, didn't he, against Huddersfield? But yeah, I mean, that was one poor game. I think we're on a bit of a run with Derek.
This is it. He's had one bad game, and he's in the development squad now. Pizano looks all right. I'm not entirely convinced, but I think he'll need a bit of time, and you know, maybe coming on here and there, or the odd game, making a start. But our back four at the start of the season looks sorted, and do you know what, fair enough, suspensions and injuries mean it has to change, but he's dropped Laurie Wilson on the back of one poor performance.
Yeah,
he's
so many other players when they're consistently poor. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I'm not saying Wilson's the best right back in the world, but he's a right back. Derek's not. I'm trying, it's like hard not to criticise Derek too much, even though he was fucking awful. I just feel it hard to judge him, and he's not playing his position. He's clearly not comfortable there, as you're saying.
It's
fucking painful watching him play out there when he's like, if they were going to score, it was going to come from down that side, and thank fuck they didn't. If Preston's strikers realised strikers play in the box, they would have won that game. And if it weren't for Wheater, they would have won that game. So.
Yeah, well, on the subject of players playing in or out of their favoured position and perhaps not excelling, let's move on to Josh Vela, lads. I know I mentioned in one of my articles last week that I was waiting for his breakout game where he finally realises all the potential that we know he's got, but another week passes without him doing so, lads. I mean,
I wrote a piece midweek because I'm trying to fill the site. Fucking Vela needs to start every game.
Well, that's what happens when you get what you wish for, to be honest with you. He looked, he's not a newcomer to this level now. But
50 games?
He looked like he was struggling, really struggling to keep pace, and he was caught in possession a few times. He wasn't particularly good on the ball, looking up to be hooked off himself rather than anybody else, I thought. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, completely anonymous. I thought I find myself wanting Dan's to come on instead of him, because at least Dan's has got a bit of a presence about him. He'll run about, if you get me. And Vela was just completely fucking anonymous. It's quite sad to see. I thought he was very good in the game against, Leeds? His quality against Leeds. And I think, I don't know if it was playing out on the right a bit, just left him isolated, or if playing Derek behind him, he was concerned about keep covering him or something like that, but he wasn't. He didn't make any impact on the game whatsoever, did he, Tom?
No, I mean, he looks like he's got no confidence whatsoever. I mean, for Josh Vela, who's probably our our best passer of a ball. I mean, there was a 2 yard, not even a 2 yard pass, that he got wrong before half time, and it nearly let him in down the left side. He looks like he's playing with no confidence at all. And to be honest, from what's been said about him, you know, from what he's been hearing from his manager, he's not going to be walking onto the pitch filled with confidence, is he?
He does seem like a player who takes a lot of things he reads to heart.
Obviously. Yeah, well, he's gonna. He's a kid, isn't he? Yeah.
I think everyone listening can tell from our fucking voices that we're just depressed as fuck at the minute, and it's
It's just so expected now, isn't it? I mean, like I said to you, and we both said earlier on, it's a fool's hope. We're turning up to these games week in, week out, expecting something to be different. And, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result every time. This is a fucking awful, awful Bolton Wanderers side managed by a guy who's struggling. You know, why should we really expect players to look uncomfortable or players to look like they're having a tough time? Because everybody is. Absolutely, everybody is, and Amiobi. I felt sorry for Amiobi. Obviously, he went not got a bit of a knock. Obviously, he was tired at the same time as well. Medine came on, had a shot. You know, it was a
he
fair.
He had a bit of an impact, to be honest. He had a bit more, like not more. Just you know, he had that shot, which brought a very good save out of Pickford, who's a decent keeper. But yeah,
he seems to be, doesn't he? But yeah. We just need more though, Dan. That's what I'm trying to get at. Really, yeah. we need more than that. But let's go through the players one by one. Just give us your thoughts briefly on how you thought they went on, and then we'll come to a couple of final little points at the end before we move on to the next segment. Right, Amos, Tom, any issues with his performance at all?
No, I mean he wasn't tested, was he? Really, but no, there's no issues.
Very little to do.
You know, it was a typical Amos performance, wasn't it? Just solid all round, and we never looked in danger, seeing him really, apart from when Johnson had those couple of chances, which you know he was a weeter, ended up blocking them. But we looked comfortable defensively. I thought it was just we had absolutely fucking no past that.
Yeah, well, I feel like if we had more 7 out of 10 players every week that you could count on like him, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Yeah.
Okay, so next one, Derek at right back. I think we've said a little bit already about how poor he looked. I think he needs to be dropped for Ipswich on, is it Tuesday or Wednesday? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Tuesday.
I think he needs to be dropped.
Definitely. He can't play right back. I said it, like, after, when did he play there first? Was it Burnley? I think he might have played. No, yeah, Burnley.
Is it Brighton? Burnley, I can't remember.
He can't. But he's not a right back, and he's fucking foolhardy to keep putting him there because he's just. It's like the hallmark of his game is like being able to put the ball on the floor, but it doesn't look like he can do that at right back. He feels too rushed and under pressure all the time. It's just he's not the fastest. He's just get him out of right back. No,
I think we really miss Wellington as well with that out ball, able to sort of pump it up into a bit of space and have someone quick who can run. But that's a debate for later on. Pizzano came on, only had 7 minutes, so it's a bit unfair maybe to go through what he did. Right, Dorian Deveet. I hate Dorian Deveet. I think genuinely think he's a contender for one of the poorest signings we've made in the last 5 years.
It looks like he was having a bit of a renaissance at the start of the season. Well, after the red card against Blackburn, which was
he's gone back to his old ways, mate. I mean, I hate to repeat myself over and over again, but if you watch him, it's like he's got if you imagine a bungee cord attached to the ball and one attached to his waist, he's forever being dragged towards the ball as if there's some magic piece of bloody rope pulling out of position, and it pisses me off every single week. How did you both think he did?
Yeah, Tom, how do you think? I think I've fucking made my feelings clear.
I haven't got too much of a problem with centre halves not being footballers, because that's not necessarily what they're there for. I mean, look at Wheater. I mean, we'll move on to him in a minute, but so I don't mind defenders doing the simple thing and getting it clear, but they're aimless. Every single one. He's not finding anyone. He's worse than
Mills. His passing is worse than Mills easily.
Well, at least Mills. I mean, like, he couldn't execute it, but at least he tried a crossfield pass. It never worked for him, but you could see what he was trying to do, failing. They're aimless. He's not aiming at anybody. They're going anywhere.
Yeah, shite. I think Prince and Wheater has to be the centre back lineup from now on. Why didn't we like appeal Prince's red card? Because it was never a fucking penalty in a million years. He didn't fucking touch him, mate.
Not at all.
Prince was stupid for rushing in and making it look so obvious. And in real time, I could completely understand why the ref gave it, because it did look it. But we should have appealed that, because he was never a fucking red card at all. And we look better with Prince in the sides, and because he's solid. And the sooner we get him with a partner, Wita, hopefully, probably, yeah, we'll, and you know, they get playing a few games in a row, we'll get a more of a solid foundation. But knowing our luck, that'll happen. Wita fucking do his Achilles in or something.
Well, I thought Wita, one of Wita's best games for Wanderers, I thought. He was really, really good. I gave him man of the match to my report, yeah. So, any advances on that?
Nah, Wita was my man of the match. We'd have lost without him.
Yeah, he's that's what you want from 1 to 11. Just throwing himself at everything. He was one of the few players on the pitch that you could tell was trying to grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And he wasn't on his own, but he was one of three or four that I felt very sorry for last night.
Yeah, it was that kind of head-shaking performance, wasn't it? Casado at left-back, like I said earlier on, you know, tidy, a couple of interesting challenges, getting people going a little bit. Again, a bit of a sort of middling performance, really. We're not a lot to say either way, Dan.
Yeah, I think there's not an awful lot he could... No, there's not, I don't think there's like an awful lot a left-back can do with the rest of the like players in front of him are performing, but... I thought he had a difficult time. Like, I know that Marek Vermeulen, whatever he's called, is fucking shit. But with him going down the right, that's where Preston were attacking. They were attacking with Vermeulen, yeah. And then that Johnson, who's a very good player, Preston, easily Preston's best player, the lad with the dreadlocks, he was coming over and making things difficult for Casado. But I thought he handled himself well. And that tackle he did on whoever it was on the touchline was fucking brilliant. It was amazing.
That was against Vermeulen, wasn't it? Yeah, because he had a bit of a paddy on. It was a bit forceful, shall we say, but it wasn't. I don't think there was anything wrong with it. No, just a tough tackle. You don't see too much of these days, was it?
It wasn't practice on fucking...
No, well, we'll talk about that in a second. Let's go straight on to Prattley. I mean, that was probably the highlight of his game, was knocking Bailey Wright 3 foot up in the air with a tackle that's probably just about finished now. It was that late. But the rest of his game was really, really poor, I thought. He struggled since he's come back, hasn't he, from his injury. I don't know whether they rushed him back a bit too soon. And I really don't want to curse him as being back to the Prattley of old, but that's the hint I'm getting. Tom, do you reckon that that's true?
I think with Prattley, the second that yellow card came out, that was it. That was him done. He does like to put himself into tackles. He's not a dirty player. That tackle was a bad and it was late. But once he got that yellow card, that was Prattley's game over after half an hour.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Next, we've got Spearing. I'm trying to work out whether he was injured or not when I watched him go off, because there was one incident where he got to challenge and it looked like he...
apparently someone said he signalled that he...
It looked like he signalled to the bench and he was off 2 minutes later, so I could be wrong in thinking that. I initially wrote in my player ratings bit that he seemed to be subbed for no reason whatsoever. Now, I reserve the right to take that back. But I thought he was one of our better players. Yeah. He looked tenacious and he looked like he wanted to make something happen, which you can't say for many other people in the team. But Dan, Spearing for you, how do you think he did?
Yeah, I think he gave the ball away a couple of times, but I'd say I'd put that down a bit to maybe rustiness. He's not played much this season, but yeah, I thought he was very good at the base. I thought he defended well, and he's, as I said earlier, his long pass to Clayton was very good, and the more we can get on that, more we can use that, the more our benefit. I'd definitely be starting him every game over everyone else, really.
Definitely. Okay, so next we've got Vella. We've spoken about him already, but a disappointing performance from Vella. He really needs to step it up, I think, a little bit. Any disagreements there?
No, not from me. It's time he... You know, we've all called for his selection. It looks like we're getting a bit of egg on our face, but he needs to book his ideas up a bit, I'd say.
Yeah, well, I do like him. I think he's got a lot about him. But do you think we're struggling to get to a point like we did when... We've often said this actually about other players, where they've spent less time on the field and all of a sudden they become better. I'm not talking about...
Funded,
yeah, precisely. Tom, do you think there's any truth in that, or do you think that's maybe a bit of an overreaction to his under par performance on Saturday?
No, I don't think that yet. I don't think that we've overhyped what a player he is, because we've seen how good he is. I just think it's a young player that's not been dealt with well. And you can tell from his performance, his confidence is on the floor, and he needs someone to pick him up and tell him how brilliant he is before our next game. But knowing the way things are going, he'll probably end up getting dropped, and he'll be on the bench for the foreseeable, won't he?
Yeah, I think that unfortunately, that looks like that's definitely going to be the way it's going to turn into. Dan's came on and had 10 minutes. Anything really to say about Dan's? I don't remember him really doing much, to be honest.
None of this, apart from Medine's shot, none of the subs made any, had either had long enough. It's Lennon's substitutes, isn't it? Just
no, I did find it entertaining how the commentators were talking about the players as if it was the first time he'd ever seen him, and reading some generic reports off the internet, like where you about Casado being a set piece expert just before he put a free kick over the top tier of Deepdale's North Stand. I thought that was quite funny. Clayton, so a few interesting runs from Clayton, and we'll talk about one of them in a second or two. But I thought he looked keen, he looked eager, starting to get back to fitness. Tom, what's his best position for you?
Probably. Well, the best I've seen him play was when he was on the left of a three playing behind one striker. I'm thinking of that, the Wigan game at home, where he just ripped Wigan to shreds, playing on the left side. But he threatened behind the strikers as well in the first half as well. Like you alluded to last week, Chris, he's not a centre forward, but he's definitely, no, the supporting cast behind him.
I think I'd like to see him back on the left wing, and I'd like Tom Walker to get a chance on the right wing, and then someone who whoever, Prattley, Davis, if he's back fit, Vella, maybe someone behind Medine. I think that's probably our best option going forward. Do you know what I've just realised though? No. I want to know how many games have we won since Chungi left.
Well, let's have a think. So he left at Christmas. I bet it's not five.
Yeah.
I was going to say you'll count them on one hand.
Easy. Yeah.
Go on, Dan. I'll let you trundle off and do that while me and Tom talk about Amiobi. Tom, what do you think?
I said I felt sorry for three players. It was Wheater, Amiobi, and Clayton. Wheater because he didn't deserve to be in a team as bad as that. Clayton because you could see he was doing everything he possibly could to make something happen and had nothing around him. And then Amiobi, I mean, he was coming very deep for the ball because
isolated.
Yeah, he was completely on his own. He was coming deep for the ball, and when he did, Davit was and Derek were smashing it over his head or to Bailey Wright or straight back to the goalkeeper. I mean, you talk about a lack of service for strikers. That was criminal. He had absolutely nothing to go off.
Absolutely agree. Dan, any advances on that?
No, I feel sorry for him. I thought he did all he could with what he had. And he came close to scoring for us from, I think it was Casado's corner, maybe Spearing's corner.
It was Spearing, I believe, on that free kick in the first half. Yeah, he nodded it over. Yeah. Medine came on, had 15 minutes. Again, had our one and only shot on goal, I think it was. So he gets a bit of credit for that. But do you think he'll start next week? I mean, I don't know what the extent of Amiobi's injury is, but we've got two games coming up in 4 days, so we're going to need a bit of rotation, aren't we?
It's literally, sorry, just a quick diversion. It's five. We've won five games since Chungi left.
Sweet Jesus.
And that's four last season, and obviously one this season.
I remember, I have gone, I think, about 10 months between watching us win, if you include the summer break. About two seasons ago, we won in about the March, and I missed the game because I was on holiday. Then you had the whole summer months, and then we didn't win for the first, 11 games of the season until we got to about November. So it was ridiculous amount of time, but it's not good, is it? Speaking of not winning games and being very disappointed, Liam Feeney, how do you think he did, Dan?
Hey, was he even playing?
Might as well not have been.
I'd try and defend him as much, I feel like I defend him more than everyone else does. I feel like he does more than people give him credit for, but I don't think he touched the ball once against Preston, to be honest with you.
No, I think he does have, he has his positives, doesn't he, with his pace on the break, etc., and his willingness. He is a trier, but it just doesn't happen. Just doesn't happen, does it? Tom, what did you think about Finn? How do you think he did?
It was anonymous, wasn't it? He wasn't the worst Bolton player on the pitch, but it was just an anonymous performance.
No, it really was. And I think we'll talk about Ipswich and Bristol coming up in a little bit, but I think changes are going to be needed to be made in order to freshen things up, because we're looking already like a tired team who's really struggling for ideas. And in the absence of Mark Davies or anyone like that, or Zach Clough, We haven't really got much to fall back on, have we? And it's depressing when you think that some of the important games that are coming up truly are must-win games, and we're really going into it with a lack of confidence and a lack of form. Okay, well, just to bring the Preston bit to a close, just a couple of bits. Do either of you think the game would have changed had whatever his name is who played for Preston been sent off for knocking Clayton over when he was through on goal?
I feel like they'd have just gone more defensive and it just had been 0-0 again. But and they'd have had to have played an over with 10 men. He puts the ball in our court, doesn't he? They're down to 10, which they should have been, but hey ho, what are you going to do? It would probably have stopped their fullbacks getting forward.
Yeah, well, that's where a lot of their attacks came in on the counter, obviously, because we were largely on top, I thought, for the majority of the game. But there did come a time where they would go on the attack, and thankfully their forwards made the sort of decisions that we'd expect ours to make as well. But Tom, do you think that anything would have been any different had he been sent off, and do you think it was a red card?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's just the laughable standard of refereeing, isn't it? I mean, he's last man. Clayton's just about touched the ball to go past him. He's coming from the side, taking him out. And I swear the linesman, when he flagged, I'll have to look back at it because I've recorded it. I swear he said off as he started to flag for the decision. I thought I'd seen the linesman say the word off as he... And I don't know whether that was in his earpiece to the referee or not, but it's just nothing surprises me about the standard of referees at this level. But there's no way that that's anything but a red card.
No, I agree completely. I mean, he was past him and he tripped him up. It's as clear as day. There can be no, like the one with Prince last week. I think there's a bit of debate because there's other players around him, and the goalkeeper almost had his hands on the ball as well. So you wonder about whether he'd overrun it a little bit. But here it was 1-on-1, simple as that. No messing about at all. Definite penalty. Definite red card, sorry. And I think he would have changed the game, but obviously we don't. We can't go back and change it. Now, one thing we're going to finish off with. Our chairman received a bit of barracking towards the end of the game from the associated, assembled 3,000 Bolton fans. Do you think that's warranted? I mean, I don't want you to go into too much depth, lads. We're going to talk about that towards the end. But on a brief level, do you think he deserves the jip he's getting, and do you think the fans are right to make him a target?
We all know there's problems run deeper in this club than just the first team squad and the manager, so probably, yeah.
Okay, Tom?
Yeah, I thought Gartside had a shocking game at left back.
And he was awful, wasn't he?
All the stick he got.
No creativity whatsoever.
It was probably the same idiots chanting with the same ones kicking off at Preston train station after the match.
Wouldn't surprise me. Well, everyone's entitled to repeat.
Did you hear the chant that was made?
Go on.
You know the Yaya and Colo Torre chant?
Oh, yeah.
We do that to Emil Heskey's shoulder on the Obina.
Of course we fucking do. Sweet Jesus. Where's the originality? Where's the originality?
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, let's book.
I was like, oh, an Emil Obina Heskey chant, that'll be funny. And I was like,
no.
It's funny, but it's just boring.
You're not wrong. I mean, on the topic of the chairman, or back to that one, I did have an interesting comment on the Facebook page of somebody before that said, "It's a Gartside, he's a fat so-and-so." And I replied back saying, what's his physical appearance got to do with it? And the fella replied back with, well, if you can't be bothered to look after your body, how can you look after a football team?
So,
I can't remember. I can't remember who it was that wrote it, but it made me spit out my cornflakes this morning.
I wonder if he'd say that to Sam Allardyce.
Exactly. I mean, have you ever heard such absolute tripe in all your life? Anyway, let's close the Preston chat for now. We'll have a short break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the week in Wanderers World. Later on, we'll talk about Ipswich and we'll talk about Bristol, and we'll finish off as usual with the Twitter question of the week. So stay where you are. We'll be back in 2 seconds. Okay, welcome back to Love Pod 34, the only podcast where Daniel Murphy tries to count down from 5 and starts at 3, then goes back to 4. Your favourite Bolton Wanderers podcast in the world. Right, I'm still joined by Tom and Dan. Lads, let's see what's going on this week in Bolton news. Right, most importantly, most interestingly, and the one with perhaps the most significance, is we've made another signing. Australian midfielder Luke Bratton has signed on loan, ostensibly from Manchester City, who he signed for on the same day from Brisbane Roar. I think that's what they're called these days anyway. They used to be called something else. Brisbane Strikers, they were when I went to watch him once. That's a long time ago. Right, so we had a bit of a conversation with the ESPN journalist who got in touch with us about how, offering some opinions. He described him as a central midfielder on the box-to-box type with an attacking dent to his game. More of a number eight sort of midfielder than a number 10. He's creative, has an eye for goal, and can unlock defensive with his passing. So all of a sudden, he seems like our best midfielder as well. In terms of the step up to the Championship, he said it's hard to know, but he is very highly rated. He's playing in a very successful Brisbane side. The Australian manager, who formerly managed Brisbane himself, called him up to the national team. Blah, blah, blah. A great opportunity for him to impress and get experience of playing. So the rumour is that he's going to go back to Australia in January after his loan spell at Bolton ends, meaning this whole thing will be a little bit weird. But do you think there's a place for a player like that in our team, Tom? It certainly sounds like there could be.
Yeah. It'll just be a case of... It does sound a little bit like City are meeting their homegrown quota, because, I mean, I know he's played in Australia, but I think because of where he was born... I think he was born over here, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was born in Hull, I believe, yeah.
So it's just one of them. They're just filling their homegrown quota. And then they've looked around and right, who's really desperate in the Northwest for football players? But yeah, why not? I know it's going to sound really strange because we've had a million and one midfielders recently, but we have lost a couple, most recently Trotter. Davis is out for a bit. Zach Clough's out, so it makes sense, and it sounds like he's going to add something, doesn't it?
Definitely. I mean, he's not a very experienced player for one that's 25-year-old. He's only played sort of 80-odd games, I think, for Brisbane, so he's not a massively experienced lad. But it's going to be interesting to see where he fits in, and I should think he'd get a game in the next couple of weeks, given our need for rotation. I mean, Dan, what do you think about him? Obviously, I'm not expecting you to know everything about him, but you think there's a player like that?
Yeah, I'd start him on Tuesday, to be honest with you. We've got nothing else. What's the fucking harm in, you know, if you can start Shola Miobi fucking after he's not played a football match for 6 months, you know, he's not been in a football team for 6 months, not fuck knows how long it was since he played, because he only made 4 appearances for Palace. Start him, I'm sure he's not that, fucking decrepit that he'll fucking pull a hamstring after 20 minutes. He's not. So yeah, I'd start him, I think. From what we've heard from, you know, fans, ESPN journalists, and occasional YouTube videos, he does. And this is going to sound like longing for the past somewhat, but yeah, I think you're not going to say he seems to resemble and sound like Stuart Holden. And fucking God knows we've been fucked since Johnny Evans put a stud in his knee. So, you know, maybe he can give us a bit of energy, a bit of solidity, and a bit of passing from the back. I'd like to think we'll obviously move on to the Ipswich game, but I think I'd like to see him and Spearman potentially line up next to each other.
Yeah, it sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Sounds solid and a bit of energy in. Well, Spearman's not the best passer, but you know, there's definitely some ball movement that can be done.
Yeah,
there, so.
Just options. We just need options, don't we? I mean, let's not beat around the bush. If we've got anyone that can go box to box, it frees up Spearman to get on with his job. It will hopefully mean that we've got someone that can involve the wide players, Feeney and Clayton or whoever.
He's going to be desperate to like prove he's actually.
Of course he is, exactly. And I think we need to appreciate our position in this. If we can prove ourselves as someone that can handle and give game time to players that City and whatever you're bringing in, it can bode well for the future with other players. So it is a bit of a weird one. I think you're both right on that one. But I think at the same time, it's not necessarily a bad thing. We can use it to our advantage as well. It's only a short-term loan, though. So, I mean, we're not going to get too attached to him, I'm sure, especially not with that hairstyle. There's not really... Oh, exactly. All of them. There's not really much else on the horizon, is there? I mean, we've had the news today that appeared on our website about Martin Odegaard, the erstwhile, I think he's 17 now, is he?
Still 16?
I don't know, but he'll be on half-term anyway, no matter what. But he's at Real Madrid. He very famously signed for them at the age of 16 for a couple of million quid, having made 16. His name back in... Is he still? Well, there you go. Having made his name back in Norway, he's not really kicked on, I don't think, despite a couple of appearances for the first team last season under Ancelotti, with Benitez not really looking to give him a try this year, unsurprisingly. So that's an interesting one. It's come out of the blue a little bit, so we're not really sure as to whether it's got any legs, but it's nice to be linked with these sort of players. Dan, do you know anything about him?
I know that he's not, as you say, was captain of strongest.
Some Norwegian team.
Pretty sure he was made. If he wasn't made the captain, he was certainly, fucking playing at 16, whatever, 15.
Mm.
Played 7 times for Norway's first team, and I said made a solitary appearance for Madrid. It always seemed weird that Madrid was the club he went to, because remember when there was like fucking practically every fucking club under the sun wanted him, didn't they? And I remember like last year he was like doing tours of, he was like taking on tours of every club, like City, Dortmund, Liverpool, United, Tottenham, Southampton, Celtic, Barcelona, Juventus, literally every club in the world literally like invited him to tour with them and train and whatnot. And I thought it was, I always thought it was strange that Madrid was the one he chose when, they've not exactly renowned for promoting youth these days. And, it's such a club where if you don't meet up to your expectations immediately, you get fucking, thrown out on your ass. So it's interesting that he's obviously not that happy and all that type of stuff. But yeah, I'd take him, like I said, it'd be really exciting. And when he's, he's highly rated, very highly rated, he could potentially go on to be one of the best players in the world, so to have him have played at Bolton at one point would be, quite funny. So I'd definitely have him.
It'd be Jack Wilshere-esque,
eh? Well, I wouldn't say Jack Wilshere's best player in the world by any stretch of the mind. I still stand by that his best run of form was at Bolton.
Mm-hmm, possibly. Tom, do you think there's anything worrying about us maybe putting all our eggs in the basket of a 16-year-old who's hardly ever played any games for anyone?
Yeah, I doubt whether or not this is actually going to happen.
The site it came from is like, the site it came from got Prince rumours first and right, got something else correct as well, which I can't remember, but it gets stuff right, this site, and HITC, something like that, I think it is.
Yeah, they're worth a watch, aren't they? Worth a follow on the social media and so on to see what's what.
HITC deadline day, they're very good for transfer stuff. And that's where they've also linked in with 5 other clubs, which is like Wolves, Brighton, clubs are a lot better than us. So I'd be very surprised if it was us he came to.
We'll see. I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? If it is what it is, if it comes off, it comes off. Another player that seems to be that's been mentioned today actually is Heskey. That he may be knocking playing on the head and going off to coaching in an unnamed destination. Some might say he gave up playing quite a long time ago, but that's that's not for me to say. Either of you bothered if Heskey quits playing and disappears off elsewhere? I mean, I wouldn't be averse to him maybe coaching at Wanderers. I mean, I don't know what he's like behind the scenes, whether he's got that sort of personality. But either of you two concerned if it means that we've seen Heskey for the final time? Other than it being one less person in the squad. Tom, do you want to answer that one first?
I've quite enjoyed having a meal. It's been humorous, to say the least. It's been good having him. But I remember listening to an interview that he did with Barry Glendening for The Guardian, and he said, that when he got the offer, this was the opportunity for him to continue his coaching badges here rather than in Australia and to play some football. So I think this has always been the plan. And to be honest, what's it, 38, isn't he? So I think maybe this has been going on for a couple of weeks because it might also explain Lennon's U-turn on signing Amiobi. Because at first he said, he's too similar, and now he's U-turned and brought him in. So maybe this has been in the pipeline for a little while. But if he gets the chance to go and coach, then I suppose this is a good time for him to do it.
It just feels like to me, if it's almost like quite embarrassing that now, Heskey, whilst we've been shit and he's not been good, it's like prideful saying that he plays for us somewhat, and it's, I don't know, it's had these like feelings I had to describe, but I feel like it'd be like him jumping the ship. It just proves how fucked we are, doesn't it, when even Heskey doesn't want to stick around.
Yeah, that's the thing. It'd be a surprise if we're not offering him that opportunity, because not only does it keeps the squad, with one extra person, obviously, because we're not blessed with striking options. But then again, he's not played for the last couple of weeks, and we've not really missed him, have we, to be honest with you. So I just think he's going to be one of them that if he goes with our best wishes, he's... Has it worked out, though? Do you think it was worth the gamble? I mean, from a fan's perspective, Tom, I'd say it was, given that his debut goal against Blackburn, forgetting the 28 games since that he hasn't scored.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. He scored on his debut and then nothing after that. But just for that goal against Blackburn, and I don't think I've ever laughed so hard at a
apart from
goal.
when Abiobi scored.
Yeah, I don't think I've. He's put a smile on my face.
I said it then after he'd scored. I don't care what happens after this. This was worth it just because of this. So, yeah, I think it was.
Fair dues, lads, fair dues. Right, okay. Well, let's call time on that particular segment then. We'll just quickly dive off and then come back and talk about Ipswich and Bristol before we finish off with the podcast question of the week. So, listeners, do stay where you are. We'll be back after this short break. All right, welcome back to third segment of Love Pod 34. That was embarrassing, wasn't it?
You called me at the start of
that segment. I did, and now it's come back to bite me in the backside. There you go, kids. Just be careful what you say, because there's always something waiting around the corner to show you what. Ipswich and Bristol City previews. Right, I made extensive notes about these two. First one was both in terrible form. Bristol had four put past them by Fulham at weekend on the home patch, in the space of about 40 minutes, if my memory serves. Ipswich themselves are in the middle of, I think it's a 7-game winless streak. They're in 14th, Bristol in 21st. Ipswich drew nil apiece with, and it's come from my memory, but they drew nil at home with somebody this weekend past. So they're not looking too clever either. But now, given our appalling away form, are you either of you expecting anything other than another defeat to add to the list?
I can see us nicking a draw, maybe away, literally another down 0-0. But I expect us to lose probably. It's just, like I said, it's just par of the course now. But these two, you know, 2 weeks ago on the podcast, you said, Chris, we've got 3 games coming up now with Birmingham, Leeds, and Preston. And you said, you know, we need, what's it going to be like if we don't come up with at least 6 points? We got two in three. Now we've got coming up, we've got Ipswich, Bristol, Reading, which is a fucking write off. And then Brentford, which is, you know, they're coming to form now. So it's a mixed month coming up, really, November. We could be fucking stranded by when the time December comes around. And I did a poll on the Twitter, because you can do polls now. You're going to get with it, aren't you? And I asked, will Bolton go down? 54% said yes, and 46% said no.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty obvious where the... That was out of 251, so... You know, people aren't expecting anything really, are they, at the minute?
No, I know I'm certainly not. Tom, are you?
I'd say anything less than 4 points from the next 2 games will constitute failure. Based on who we're playing, I just don't see us scoring the goals to get us those 4 points.
No, me neither. I mean, that's it. Simple fact, isn't it? You can't shoot, you can't score, you're not going to win. I'm in exactly the same boat as you. I think the Bristol City games are more important, but I'd be delighted with a point on Tuesday night against Ipswich away from home, given our atrocious away form. Just think it's one of them. It's a game that we don't tend to win, do we? Historically, you know, a midweek long away trip such as that. I really don't think we're going to struggle. I mean, I don't hate to say it, but do you think Lennon will survive if we were to lose both games, Tom?
It's a tough one. Yes, but I think it'll be Lennon that makes the decision rather than somebody else.
I've been thinking he's about to walk since fucking the summer. I'm surprised. I'm still surprised he's not.
But,
to be honest with you, who was it? Liam, I think, made the great point that if he walks now, how's he going to get into a job that's better?
I was just going to say the exact same thing, showing up the fact that I haven't had a chance to listen to last week's podcast yet. I'll listen to it tomorrow, I promise, Dan. Don't hate me. I'm driving to Newcastle for work in the morning, so I've got plenty of time to listen to it. But yeah, I agree. I think if he was to walk away, I think that's the most likely scenario. But I also think it's also fairly unlikely too, given the character he is. And given the fact that, yeah, how does that look on your CV if you walked away from the first job you had in a semi-competitive league? I mean, I know he left Celtic under his own steam, but I think in a slightly different circumstances, it's not really comparable. Dan, sorry,
no,
God knows, I very much doubt it. And again, we would maybe in the same boat. Who would want to come to us? We're not a club with the best squad. We're not a club with the best.
Gary Megson. That'd be funny.
Well, you know,
I'm not even. I was doing that for being funny, but in my head I was like,
it makes a very, very strange kind of sense, doesn't it, unfortunately, and that's the sad thing. Yeah, so what do you think then, Dan? Do you think he can survive two losses from either point of view, from resignation or firing?
Again, like, just as you say, it's like there's no good way out for anyone and there's no good result for anyone. So no matter, him leaving, no matter how it happens, it's just not a good result for him. It's not a good result for us unless we see, we thought we did well getting Lennon in the first time, a manager that we thought we'd never be able to get one of that quality. So fuck knows what would happen next time if we had to get someone else in. It's,
yeah,
it just doesn't. I think he would stay because again, I just don't see any good way out of it.
It is really strange, and it's really, really unsettling, isn't it? Not to know what the future can hold. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've gone past the point, I think, haven't we, of sticking with him because there might not be anybody else better. I think even, no matter who your manager is, we've seen it with Mourinho, he might well be one of the best managers in the league, in the world possibly, but if it's not happening, it's not happening. And when do the clubs pull the trigger? And when do they say enough's enough? I think we're approaching that point now. It'll mean us, if we don't win, of course, we'll talk about Ipswich first, it'll mean us adding another game to our list. Are we just expecting it now? Are we numb to it a little bit? You know, oh well, it's another away game, oh well, it's another loss. Yeah. Do you think there's some truth in that, Dan?
Yeah, I feel like people are just becoming apathetic now. I think people who very much follow on Twitter, like, go to every single game and I consider it not going. It's just making, it's just not enjoyable anymore. It's not, I don't even think people are that arsed about defeats. It's just, providing they're of a smaller quality and there's an odd win in there. It's just, there's no fight, there's no fucking passion, really. There's no quality of any fucking decipherable measure. It's just fucking depressing and dour to watch. And even Wigan are playing well now, so it's not as if we've got that to fucking laugh at as well, because they've had some of the fucking best fucking away games all season, the mad bastards.
Yeah, wasn't there something about they've got 10 points from the 92nd minute onwards or something, crackers like that.
95th minute winner at weekend.
Dickheads. Dickheads. They would be, absolutely, if we were to get relegated and then promoted, delete every social media presence, because
it'd have to happen.
I can take the shitness of my own team, but I'm not sure I could take back half of what we dished out to those dickheads over the past 3 months. But we'll see. Bristol City again. Don't really know a lot about Bristol City, to be honest with you, apart from the fact that when I got married, they were in the hotel. Same as us, and so we had our breakfast with the team the next morning, and their striker Kieran Agard has got his surname tattooed on his arm. I thought it was quite interesting. He's got Agard tattooed on there, and Steve Cottrell was in a suit with a pair of flip flops on as well at breakfast. Very, very, very strange, man. Shit the bed, man. I don't know anyone. I just don't know. I mean, I agree with Tom about putting Wilson in, or potentially putting Vela back at right back. I wouldn't have Derek anywhere near there. Yeah, I think Prince has got to come back in for Devitt. Casado can keep his place for me. I'm not bothered about left backs, really. It's a bit of an inconsequential position for me. I don't think Ipswich are known for having their wingers, although Daryl Murphy, he was their top scorer last season. I think he struggled this year, so no doubt we'll give him a helping hand back up from that point of view. In fact, one thing I wanted to discuss with you, and listeners can chip in on Twitter on this one, was, do you think Lennon's cut his nose off to spite his face a little bit in terms of someone like Meadow? Do you think he could do a job in this team on this form at this minute in time, Tom?
I mean, when he came in, he had a bit of battle about him and a bit of fight, and that's something that we're lacking. But if you put Meadow into the team, is he going to play for Neil Lennon now, after everything that's gone on?
It looks incredibly unlikely, but that's what I was wondering about, whether he's made his bed now, Lennon, and he's not gonna play him, it seems, under any circumstances. When, let's not forget, he's shown in the past that he can be a good footballer, Meadow. Maybe we could do with someone like that, a bit of variety at least.
I feel like we've got, we've got too many midfielders who can't pass, and have, fairly passengers when a midfield gets a little bit too tough. So I'm not too arsed about Meadow, to be honest with you.
Oh, fair enough. I'll withdraw that comment then. Nice one, lad. Shut me down completely.
You can have your own opinion as well if you think the shit.
Cool stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go straight into the podcast question, shall we? Because I'm not sure we really want to talk about football for much longer. Right, judging from the fans' chants late on in the game on Saturday night, they obviously want Gartside out. They think he's held the club back, responsible for all the ills that have befallen us. The question was, do you think he has held the club back? Do you think we'd be better off without him as the chairman? So let me just read through the answers and I'll come to you both for a bit more of a detailed response shortly. Wayne Hamer on Facebook said, yes and yes. If I say what I really think, I'll end up in court. So Wayne, pretty forthright in his opinions there. BWFC News and Views on Twitter. Sounds like he did hold us back with Allardyce, but I think his hands are tied as much as Lennon's are with finances now. So that's an interesting point of view. Craig Monk says, the first question, it's impossible to answer whether he's held the club back, that is. Second question, always better people out there, but could we get them? No, be careful what we wish for. I mean, chairman's not really the sort of position, is it, where you can sort of say, well, I'd rather have X or Y or Z in charge of it instead. But I think it's more of a symbolic thing than that. James Georgeson, I'm pretty sure no one was crying about him during the good times. People have very fickle memories. I'm not sure memories can be fickle, but I understand where you're coming from there, James. A new one on our list, Good Kvass Enjoyer. And I'm not going to pronounce his Twitter name. I'll spell it. It's PrstskrzKrk. Pristerskrik. Not much. Don't like him, but what more could we have achieved in the past 20 years with a different chairman? Would we have not lost 5-0 against Stoke? Interesting point. Ginny Adfields, but we would have to have a replacement if it wasn't him. So I'm struggling to work out what he does these days. That's a common accusation thrown against the chairman, that one. Sam Heathcote says, in all honesty, Gartside isn't the problem. He's employed to take all the abuse and to do contracts with the players. That's it. And then to finish off, back to Facebook, David Withstanley says, yes, but only as Eddie Davies' representative. Ultimately, he's a shareholder, so should want the club to be profitable and successful. I wish the solution would be to replace Gartside and would be all for it at the present moment, but common sense tells us it wouldn't change a thing. David, I think that's the best comment, and we'll leave that one there as the final one. So, Dan, come to you first on that one. Answer the question as you see fit, and then we'll move on to Tom.
I always find it hard to discuss this topic whenever it comes up because I just don't feel like I'm educated enough to comment on it. I don't understand. You know what I mean? I just don't know what he does. I don't know what he's supposedly done wrong, apart from what Allardyce, you know, the lack of ambition that Allardyce has always, you know, thrown at him. So, I don't know. It's hard to say what would... Would we have had the good times without him? Would we be relegated without him? It's hard to, literally, we don't live in a fucking... I can't hop over to a parallel universe and see what happens if he does leave, can I? So, I find it really hard to answer because it's impossible to know, isn't it?
It's totally intangible.
I can't give something a bit more in depth, but I just don't feel like I know enough about the whole situation. That's the type of the game, type of Bolton I just try to, you know, keep gleefully ignorant about because it just depresses the fuck out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you come from there, and it's interesting to hear you say it because at the end of the day, should we really care who is in charge of the football club? I mean, he's all well and good shouting, we want Gartside out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying these people are right or wrong. I don't really have an opinion either way on it, to be honest. Tom, where do you stand on the debate? Do you think the chairman has that much of a role in things on a day-to-day basis that him not being in post would improve our position?
Well, the chanting last night really wound me up. And it's clear that had we have won 3-0, you wouldn't have heard those chants. Those chants are a reaction to the shite that we had to watch on the pitch. But these are the same people that when you ask about, you know, Neil Lennon's job security, they say, oh, there's nothing he can do, his hands are tied. Well, does that not apply with the chairman as well? The only aspect of Phil Gartside's job where he's failed is hiring inexperienced and incompetent managers. Now, that's a pretty big failing, because he's not hired well. His last good appointment was Gary Megson. But beyond that, what he's tried to do is he's tried to recreate his appointment of Sam Allardyce. He's bringing someone in with not too much experience, who's quite young, who will bring some good times to the club. And he's failed to do that with his appointments of Coyle, Friedman and Lennon.
Yeah.
But what on earth is going to change on the pitch or off it if he's out of a job? Nothing would change whatsoever. We'd still be in the same financial situation. We'd still have the same crap squad that's going to take us to League One. Absolutely nothing would change. And why they're turning the chance towards a chairman who, let's face it, he's a Wanderers fan. who's taken us to the Premier League. We've had 11 years, we've had two sessions in Europe, and that's all very quickly forgotten. But what a change. What I just don't, I don't get it. I really don't get it. He's paid very well to do what he does. I can guarantee he's not paid as well as some of the players that we've got, and that's
Yeah.
that's what's criminal. But I just don't get it. I just don't get what they want, what these people want to achieve. Get rid of him, and someone else comes in. What's going to happen? You know, is he going to just pull £180 million out of his arse and pay off our debt? It just, it really winds me up. I don't get it. I don't get it whatsoever.
No, I mean, again, not to over-egg it a bit, but I know exactly where you both come from, and I do agree. It's difficult to know what impact it would have, and he has become, for right or wrong, the sort of face of the failure, hasn't he, at the same time? I think you're dead right about the hiring and firing. I think there's real problems in judging. I mean, Friedman came out of the blue, and he came out of the blue for a reason, because nobody considered him to be a reasonable prospect. Coyle was probably an emotional one, but again, it maybe made sense at the time.
Yes, I'm saying everyone, no matter what you think of the appointments, what happened after them, at the time, everyone was praising him. Like, every time, they always find the
yeah.
Apart from Megson, which, as you said just then, Tom, you think's the only one he did get right. That's the one everyone, so is it us or the fickle cunts? You know, that was the one we all criticised, and it was, as you say, you think it was the only one he did right, whereas we all praised him to high heaven for Friedman, Coyle and Lennon.
And Lennon, yeah, not absolutely, and even the part he played in bringing Allardyce to the club as well, if you believe what's been said. I just think that, you know, a chairman's a symbolic role, and other than the hiring and firing, like you said, Tom, back to your point there, what else can he do? You know, he's not on the pitch, he's not picking the team. So to chant "we want Gartside out" is perhaps missing the point a little bit, but I do understand why they do it. And I dare say, if I hadn't have been elsewhere trick-or-treating with my little and mates, then I might have been joining in on that one. But it's not as straightforward as sacking the chairman and then all of a sudden everything's right with the world. I don't even think it's that as much of an issue as to who we're bringing instead. You know, because £400,000 a year is an attractive job to be a director of a football club. I'm sure it is. Is a you know well-respected, experienced man and all, but should never be in a job for life. Absolutely not. No chance of that. So, on that bombshell, anything else to add, lads, for this week's pod before we knock it on the head?
Don't think so.
I think it's been pretty comprehensive, hasn't it?
Indeed. Just need to win.
We do. So Ipswich on the 3rd, Bristol on the 7th, and then we've got a fortnight off until Reading after that. So we really need to get these wins coming up now, because
there
we've got
go.
Some hard games.
Two wins in two, and we'll be talking about the playoffs again.
Gartside in, eh? Gartside in, cool. Well,
a strange, a positive note to end on, since this podcast has been nothing but a slurry of fucking depression.
Absolutely. So we'll leave it there. Thanks, lads, for coming on today. Dan, where can people find you this week on the internet?
As always, it's at Mabroski on pretty much every social media you can imagine.
Okay, and what about yourself, Tom?
At Down the Manny Road.
Manny Road being Down the Manny RD, of course. Great, and I'm Chris at 90manning83. It's been a pleasure hosting the show again for you all, and we'll see you all next week. So look after yourselves and take care. Bye.